You're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Hey, welcome to Boggy Talk. Thanks for joining us today. And by us, I don't mean my faithful co-host, James Ross, because today he's not. I'm joined by Lucas Comer. How you doing, Lucas?
I'm good.
You're gonna have to get a little closer to that microphone.
How's it going?
There you go. Lucas is so comfortable right now.
So excited.
This is Lucas's jam.
Yes.
He loves talking into a microphone.
Honestly. Microphones are my favorite.
That's right. Yeah. Lucas Comer is our kids minister here at Church on Bay Shore, and he's joining us today because we're doing a series on next gen, and that's short for next generation for those of you who may not know church lingo. But before we dive in, Lucas, tell Boggy Talk, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great.
Why are you doing great?
Oh, man. You know, just getting ready for summer ministry, all the exciting things.
You take a break all summer, right?
Yes,
kids ministry,
absolutely.
There's nothing going on
I
at
made
all.
A summer calendar and it was just blank. There was nothing on there.
So wouldn't that be amazing?
It was great. Yeah.
So tell us what's going on this summer for kids ministry.
Oh, we have so many things. So this summer we have Bayshore Kids Clubs, which are taking place on June 10th through the 14th.
Yeah,
and so that's exciting because we have 21 locations.
Did you say 21 locations?
I did. Yes. All across our community. We've got them in Blue Water, Rocky Bayou area. We've got one in Crestview this year, one in Shalimar. We're spreading out everywhere.
That's awesome.
And so we're excited. We're recruiting for people.
Where are you at, Freeport? That's everywhere. Like people come to church
exactly.
All those areas.
It's perfect.
We need one Freeport.
I know.
Where you at, Freeport?
Come on.
All right.
But yeah, so we're doing that. We're recruiting for volunteers. So if you're interested, if you're a part of our church or in the area, come hang out.
If I were interested, how would I sign up?
Well, if you're here on a Sunday or a Wednesday, there are two beautiful displays in front of the boat.
I like the color.
I like that it's a fun theme.
And there's an inflatable
orca
killer whale
hanging.
Orca. That's the PC term, right?
Yes. We don't say killer whale in children's ministry.
That's right. Gosh, Lucas, you're so woke.
I know. So there's one there, and then there's one in front of the welcome desk. And so you can sign up. You can see all 21 locations on the wall, and you can see which ones have a team already, and then you can see the ones that have a need. Or you can visit the website and just go to churchonbayshore.com/kidsclubs.
Kids clubs. Sweet. So after kids clubs, what's happening?
We have Center Kid Camps.
So
we're taking 26 kiddos to camp, which we're super excited about.
One of my kiddos is going. He's so excited.
It's going to be so much fun.
He's going to be life of the party at
camp.
Absolutely. They're going to rename the camp
yes.
to mm-hmm. Ezra Fuge.
Every staffer will love him and fall in love with him. It'll be great. So we've got that. And then there's Uganda, which is exciting because you're like, how does that have to do with kids ministry? And it's because—
What does it have to do with kids ministry?
Our kids ministry supports 10 sponsor kids with One More Child in Uganda. And so we'll get to go visit Laura Jones, our partner there. And then we'll also get to visit those kids that our Bayshore kids are praying for, writing cards for, and supporting.
That's awesome.
And so it's really cool.
Cool. And then after that, you don't have anything else going on in your life.
Not personally or
anything.
No,
not at all.
Not like—
Just kidding.
Yeah.
What's going on after that?
Well, when I get back from Uganda, it's 1 month until the wedding. So that's exciting.
Yes, we are so excited for you and for Chloe.
It's going to be so fun.
It is. It's going to be great. So, well, that's exciting. All these things are happening this summer. And really, we're just thankful for what God is doing in our kids ministry, in our next generation. One of our values is the priority of every generation is the next generation. So today and for the next couple of weeks, we are going to do a series on the next generation. And that's why Lucas is here, because we're going to talk about really as a church, how as we prioritize the next generation, what that really looks like. And one of the things that a quote that I came across recently was this, is that culture helps determine the strategy. And I think that is a really good statement because the message of the gospel doesn't change. It's the same, just like Jesus. It's the same yesterday, today, and forever. The gospel is what saves. But our culture does determine the strategy, because, and we would recognize this, because ministry in Niceville looks different than ministry does in New York City, where mm-hmm. we have one community church that we are supporting. We have high schoolers going to serve there this summer. It's also, it looks different in Uganda, where you're going to be serving. It looks different in other countries. Mm-hmm. I think it also, something we have to represent, recognize, is that ministry culture is different now than it was 10 years ago, than it was 20 years ago, than certainly it was 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I just want to begin this by helping people maybe my age and older, because I'm putting myself strategically at the young end of this. but just understand just how much culture has changed really since we were kids and students. So mm-hmm. if you go back to like in the 90s, we're going to start in the 90s, like when I was a student in student ministry, a kid and then a student ministry, that was like the heyday of youth ministry. Like mm-hmm. every church had big, awesome, epic youth ministries. They all had their own name you had to brand your youth ministry and mm-hmm. they all had like super trendy names like Fuel or Transit, or they all had to be one word.
The Refuge.
Mm-hmm. This church was Resonate. Like Resonate. It's just kind of what it was, you know? And youth groups were huge. Like it was the big thing. There were big events. There were, you know, like I grew up like after in middle school and high school, after football games, our church would host a fifth quarter and it would just be crazy, you know, like lock-ins and all that kind of stuff. But then things started to change really in the early 2000s. And a huge piece of that was 9/11 and its impact on our country and the culture. Initially there was kind of a resurgence of attendance at church. But then we saw very quickly how that attendance surge kind of died off, and what began to happen were more conversations. And it was already happening, but our country at that point became much more pluralistic in terms of belief. And we see a lot more of the relativization of truth. And then late 2000s, you have a huge recession in our country, and that impacted churches, and churches slashed budgets. They laid off staff, slashed budgets. People started attending church less. In tandem with this is the politicization of, is that right? Politicization?
I think that's
politicalization?
Right.
I don't know. One of those words of America. And then really coming out of the recession is just a cultural factor now is just the proliferation of activities that families are involved in. And I would say lumped into that is travel, everything. It's travel, sports, travel, music, travel, activities. Like families, kids, students are just busier. Their schedules are more full than ever. And then technology, this is a huge impact. I mean, think about this. Like, I mean, we carry phones in our pockets to give us access to the world. I mean, our phones have, our phones have more storage memory than our first laptops did when we were students. So just think about this. And then, of course, COVID and its impact on society and isolation and how that really impacts all of our relationships. So we find ourselves here now, 2024, kind of like synthesizing all of these cultural influences and where we are now. So mm-hmm. today, that was a long setup for what I want you to speak to, really about your role. You're in a unique position because you grew up in the aughts, in the 2000s, mm-hmm. Born in the late 90s, grew up in the aughts and the teens, and you serve families and you serve kids, but you also don't have kids of your own yet. So I think you do have a very unique perspective. And I think sometimes people may look at you and say, well, you don't have kids yet. You don't know what it's really like. And while there is merit to some of that, in some ways you have a little bit better of an objective view mm-hmm. of things because you can see things for what they really are and really the effects of the emotions not in it, in the decisions of the schedule for you right now. So what shifts would you say you've seen in parents? Because really you have kids ministry experience prior to COVID, but then mm-hmm. you came here during COVID.
Yeah. So fun.
So we're going to pick up right there, mm-hmm. you know, because this is where families with kids and students and where we as a church are right now. What would you say are the shifts that you have seen in parents and their kids post-COVID, for better and for worse? Not everything is necessarily bad.
Yeah. I would say, like, especially right at the beginning of the pandemic, there was this big realization and this big awakening. I don't know if that's the right word, that parents weren't quite ready to be the disciple makers, which was a big perception shift for me, because like a part of like values that were taught into me was that parents are the primary disciple makers. And yes, that's incredibly true. But what happens when parents aren't ready to be the primary? And so that was just a big realization, because the church essentially went online, and so went away from the schedule, the physical, we go there twice a week, three times a week, mm-hmm. however many times. And so a lot of parents struggled with like, what am I supposed to be doing at home? Like, mm-hmm. what is the goal? Like, I have a Bible I can read with them. Like, is that it? Like, is that what I'm supposed to be doing? How do I navigate this? Mm-hmm. And so that was a big shift, that was really good. Like, it was a really good awakening, because I think a lot of parents really found themselves in this cycle of like, I bring my kids to church, we pray before meals occasionally, like sometimes we read the Bible, sometimes we have theological conversations, mm-hmm. and then I bring them back to church and we do it all over. Where I think a lot of parents really, that shook them, and they were like, oh, I do need to take that priority. So that was a good one. I think a bad shift that I've kind of noticed since the pandemic is we were so ready for normal after that I think we signed up for double the amount of things coming back into life.
I think you're absolutely than before, right. Yeah.
Because we were just at home and we were stuck at home, and all we could think about is all the things that we missed. We mm-hmm. missed getting to be with our friends. We missed getting to do all of these things, go on vacation, mm-hmm. sign up for these things. And so I think a lot of families found themselves very quickly overwhelmed, because our bodies got into a routine of having those good, healthy boundaries of, oh, I go home and mm-hmm. I get to stay at home and do this stuff. And then we like intensified how much we signed up for, which was overwhelming.
You're absolutely right. I think it was funny because, you know, coming out of COVID, people were like, actually, it was so nice to not have to be somewhere all the time. And it was so this and that, fill in the blank. It was, we had dinner together as a family. But then I think most people came
those
out.
Same families.
Yeah.
Those just same families.
Overcome, and now mm-hmm. it's like, we're actually, I think, worse than we were before COVID in terms of the busyness of lives. And I think all of that comes into play. You hit on something important, how it really highlighted the need of the church to mm-hmm. be better at equipping parents to be disciple makers. And we'll talk some more about strategies for that in just a little bit. So let's talk about just some continuing, some culture shifts that have happened, but continue to see the implications of them. We're going to talk about three big shifts in culture and mm-hmm. really your take on their impact on kids. And maybe from your perspective as a kids minister, and you also are serving parents and families, you know, what would you say to us as parents, how to help navigate some of these shifts as we parent, like, but also even for our own adult lives and as we form and shape our kids? And the first is this, the shift from the industrial age to the information age. And this has been a long shift. It's still happening. And what we mean by this is really a shift from all the doing to now everything in the information age. Everything is at our fingertips all the time. Mm-hmm. And how does this impact kids, parents, and kids ministry?
Yeah, I think it's hurt some of our kids in how, like, you know, it's a valuable skill to be able to go out and search for something and have to have patience and have to have endurance and long suffering mm-hmm. to find out something, which long suffering may not be the right word, but now they just want it instantly.
Yeah.
We're all about instant gratification.
We want to take the struggle out of things. Like, I remember I was telling my kids, like, they're doing some research papers and they're just, they look everything up online. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I remember like we had to like take this printed Xerox piece of paper we had to go after school to the library mm-hmm. and like get books off the shelf. I know this sound mm-hmm. makes me sound
scour
so old,
the books
right?
for
yeah,
things.
Exactly.
Yes.
It was a process of learning. And mm-hmm. so that's, you know, it's exactly what we're talking about. But now it's like, we don't even, I think, we don't even want things to be hard mm-hmm. anymore. Like, we just want instant answers, Instagram. I mean, our kids, like, if they're doing, listen, parents, if your kid is doing math homework online, you know what they're doing? They're Googling the problem and getting the answer. Exactly. That's just what, because mm-hmm. yeah. we're not caring about the process as mm-hmm. much anymore as just getting the answer.
Yeah. So I think that's hard, because I think I kind of see it in two ways. Behavior wise, we see it a lot, because kids, like, we just have to sit with them. Like, as a kids ministry leader, I have to sit with a child while they're having a breakdown, or they're really upset, or they're really just angry at something, and just have to walk them through, like, okay, you didn't get what you wanted on the first try. Okay, what's our next step? Like, let's walk through this together. Like, we don't always get what we want. We don't always do this. And, like, talking them through that to kind of calm them down a little bit, because they're just so used to things happening so quickly. But then I also kind of see it in, like, Bible teaching and how they understand the Word of God and, like, God's, like, how he plays out in our everyday life, because mm-hmm. they want things to happen so quickly, and they don't quite, they struggle with the idea that sometimes our relationship with the Lord is like, we have to wait on things, and we have mm-hmm. to really, we have to get to know God. There's not a point in kids ministry or in student ministry or in our adult lives where we're going to hit the check mark and we're going to be like, yep, right. I got it. I'm done. And yeah. so that can be a hard concept for kids to, like, previous times you're teaching him, like, who is Jesus? What did he do for you? And then mm-hmm. it just automatically clicks for some people. But I feel like we're having to spend a lot more time on the why of, like, why should I care? Like, why should I spend so much time reading the Bible? Why should I mm-hmm. spend time talking to my friends about this? Like, why does this matter if it doesn't immediately and directly impact my everyday life? And yeah. we're trying to tell them that it does. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't do it in the way that you think.
Yeah. Do you think it's like, we're just so much more like pragmatic, like, tell me about me, tell mm-hmm. me about me.
Yeah.
And how does this affect me, rather than the process, the relationship part of wait, like you said, waiting on God. So I think a stream I'm picking up as you're saying this, it really hits us towards another one of these shifts. And that is mm-hmm. the shift from absolutes to relativism. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, like, why is this even important? That's kind of how does it affect me is a stream of breaking off the river of relativism, which is just anything can be true. What's mm-hmm. true for you is true for you and doesn't have to be true for me. And this is moving away from culturally, even outside of Christianity, God is the source of all truth. But even outside of the church, in our culture, there have been absolutes. And now we've moved culturally much more to less and less absolutes, mm-hmm. except the absolute that nothing is absolute, which is an absolute. So mm-hmm. there you go, contradiction into relativism. And this makes its way into families and makes its way into churches. So how would you say, how is the shifting line of right and wrong impacting parenting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard, because that shift, like, if you look down at the root of it, like, this relativism thing is rooted in a sin of selfishness. Like,
yeah,
if you get down to the, and if you get down into the root, and it's like, what I want, what I need, what I think, what I feel. And so it's hard, because I think it's hard for parents to navigate that, because a parent comes at a lot of conversations as, I want the best for my child. I want my child to be happy. I want them to just feel loved. I want them to feel happy. I want them to feel a part of the world. And I think there's a lot of root in that that's good and healthy. Like, we want our kids to have a full life. We want them to feel wanted. We want them to feel like they are important. And so I think a lot of parents struggle with that navigation of, like, okay, what is the actual goal here? Is it for them to be happy all the time, or is it for them to live a meaningful life? And to, like, I think a lot of parents want to take the struggle out of things, and mm-hmm. they don't want them to struggle the way that they struggled. I know, like, my parents tried their best to be like, we don't want you to struggle with any of the things that we had to struggle with.
Right. Yeah. Which now, is, I think, is kind of a natural feeling.
Yes.
As a parent, you want your mm-hmm. kids to have it better than you.
Yes. But kids are still going to struggle. Like, we live in a fallen and broken world. And so we can protect kids from 80% of the stuff that we think that we protected them from, but they're still going to struggle with 20% of the things that we don't see coming. Mm. And like, they're going to experience things. And so I think parents struggle with that balance, especially when it comes to cultural things, yes. because especially if you have a kid that leaves the house, yeah. they're going to encounter mm. ideas and thoughts and ideologies that you may or may not believe in, or that you may or may that we think is right and that you think is wrong or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard for parents to navigate that. And I think it's also hard, like, recognizing that the people that are raising kids right now, young kids, preschoolers, early elementary, they're a part of a generation that is incredibly unreached when it comes to church. Like,
yeah,
they're,
this is true.
They're like, if you look at the generation that they were grew up in, like, church, mm-hmm. that's where church really started to become optional or yeah. not as enforced and things. Yeah. And so,
and it's not emphasized.
Yeah. So there's a lack of, like, do I know what's right and mm-hmm. wrong? Do I know how to navigate this? Do I know how to say no? I know that this is wrong, but do I know how to back that conversation up?
Right.
Like, how do I teach my child this? Because I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and you know this from working with kids. Mm-hmm. I know this from having kids. Kids are really, really good at picking up on inconsistencies mm-hmm. In ways that we are inconsistent. And so,
yes.
and they'll call it out and mm-hmm. they'll say, well, you're saying that, but you don't do that. And mm-hmm. then you, as a parent, have to be like, dang, you're right, but I don't want to admit you're right.
You got me.
But really, and if we are telling them something, but emphasizing something else with the way we live, mm-hmm. guess which one they're going to believe? Mm-hmm. They're going to believe what we've shown them versus what we've told them. If yep. what we're showing them doesn't match what we're telling them. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, in many ways, we as the church, as Christian parents, are really reinforcing relativism in our homes and mm-hmm. the way we live out our lives, because we're saying you have to believe all this, and we believe this is true, but we're not really reorganizing our lives mm-hmm. or reprioritizing our lives or giving our time and attention and focus and money to the things that we say are absolute. Mm-hmm. And so we're really... it's confusing for kids. And I think there's a lot of tension in this to manage. There's a lot of, you know, what does this actually look like in my life? But I think at the root, that is a root of a lot of it, is that we're actually, like, practically being relativists in our homes, mm-hmm. Rather than really focusing on what is true. So a question for you, as for those of us who are parents, what are some things we can do to better equip our kids to hold on to truth in a world that is going to deny that there is truth?
Oh, that's so good, because our kids club theme this summer
this was not intentional.
This was not scripted. The theme is Breaker Rock Beach, and the concept behind it and the truth that they're going to be learning is that God's truth never changes, even in an ever changing world.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think the big thing there, and it sounds too simple, and so I think families flee from it because it sounds so simple, is you don't know the truth unless you're reading the truth. And yeah. so if your family is not in the word, you're not going to know the truth. You're not going to be able to have conversations about the truth. You're not going to be able to, that it needs to flow as a part of your language and a part yeah. of things that you talk about. And so, easy first step, get into the word with your kiddos. Mm-hmm. And so that is before bedtime, in the morning, before dinner, mm-hmm. have a time where your family sits together and reads the Bible. Mm-hmm. There are great Bible storybooks out there. If you have young preschoolers and things that summarize Bible stories with, like, pictures and fun things. If it's hard for some of your kiddos to just sit and listen to you read the Bible. And then I think even if you have, like, elementary kids or students, like, that's just such an easy way for them to constantly hear the truth and hear it regularly.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that at family dedication a couple of weeks mm-hmm. ago, Deuteronomy 6, this passage where it just says, you talk about it when you sit mm-hmm. and rise, put it, you know, on your joy post, like, everywhere. Like, we want to center our lives around the world and mm-hmm. giving that anchor. And then talking about, I mean, I think a huge piece of this too is even when kids are young, like, talking, if they go to school, talking about the things they're hearing,
yes.
helping them, mm-hmm. helping kids debrief mm-hmm. What they're hearing and being exposed to, and not just assuming that because you are teaching them the truth that they're able to apply it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, let's be real, a lot of adults don't do that.
Yes.
So I think just having conversations and helping kids really apply the truth to what they're experiencing with their friends, what they're experiencing with classmates, what they're experiencing on the ball field or in the band, and what they're experiencing even here at church, you know, like how do we really flesh out what we're hearing?
And you have to have intentional times where you stop. I think parents, like a lot of parents, would agree with that. Like, oh yeah, I have to talk to them. But if they look at their weekly schedule, there's not time where they do that.
Yeah.
And so you have to be intentional as a parent to say, all right, we're going to, at family meal, we're not going to turn the TV on and we're going to talk. Like, how was your day? What did you hear about? What did you talk about? And if you're a busy family, you can create that in the car, like turning the radio off and saying, we are going to talk in this car ride, wherever we're going.
Yeah.
And you do have to remember, like, your kids are talking about everything that they hear, everything that they see. Are they talking about it with you, or are they talking about it with people at school or people in their church group or people in this? And like, you as a parent want to be that filter that your child helps navigate the world with.
Yeah. And really, I think we try to think with the future in the mind, and with the future in mind, I think about, like, what do I want my relationship with my kids to be when I'm an adult, when they're adult, when I actually mature, when they're adults. And what I want is that, you know, at that point you want a friendship, and I want them to talk to me about what's going on in their life. I want them to talk to me about big ideas, and that won't happen if we haven't created that culture of conversation in dialogue right now, patterns that reinforce it. All right. So, last shift, the shift from being together to isolation. And so, we're not talking about just COVID, because we came back from COVID, and even though we got to be around people again, you know, they're statistically speaking, most people would say they feel more isolated than ever. And certainly it doesn't take much cultural observation to realize a huge impact of this is technology and screens. So I want you, can you just talk about togetherness and isolation, and what you see, kind of the implications of isolation right now?
Yeah, I think that's really good. I mean, technology, it's bold for me to talk about it, because I grew up in an age where I had it at my fingertips when I was in middle school. And so...
But your opinion matters.
I know. but it's hard seeing kids be so entranced with technology and with TV screens and with phones and tablets. And you have toddlers now who know how to unlock their parents' phone and go to YouTube and look up their favorite Miss Rachel song or something like that.
I'm kind of glad.
Yes. And so, like, it's scary, because they know how to do that, and they don't need help. They don't need people around them. They can do that all by themselves, and they're in their own world. And it's dangerous to be alone, and it can be hard to navigate that. And kids grow up feeling like that's normal. And so then when they start to encounter different struggles or different things as they enter school, and if they experience hard times, then they don't know how to be together. They don't know how to ask for help. They don't know how to seek out and talk about emotions and talk about feelings, because all they've ever done is watch people do that. They haven't actually participated in it.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how do you fix that? What do you do?
Throw all of the technology away. No, I'm just kidding.
We go live Little House on the Prairie. Yes. We're going Little House on the Prairie style.
Yep. Come on.
We're going to go outside and churn butter, kids. Yes.
No, I think.
Going back to the Oregon Trail.
Yes.
No, then your kids are going to have dysentery and cholera. Yeah, so
there's some good things. Yeah, you know. I think the important thing there is having boundaries and setting boundaries as a family, and recognizing that as a parent, I'm going to set this boundary for my kids. And I understand there may be some personal sacrifices that I have to make. Mm-hmm. If I turn the TV off, that means I have to figure out what my kids are going to do. I have to help them.
Yeah.
I have to help them figure out what toys they're going to play with, or are they going to go outside and I need to watch them. And it's not necessarily a break for me. Not that all parents are looking for that, but we do kind of,
I think a lot are.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
It's a mental break. I get to scroll on my phone.
And, like, I think you're not saying don't ever let your kids, like, it's okay for there to be time for that. Like, you know, it's okay that it is okay to need a break as a parent. Like, you know, don't let somebody be like, they're your children. How dare you say you need a break?
Yes.
We come on, folks. Yes. We need a break from ourselves, right? Yes. We got to go to bed because we Absolutely. Can't handle any more of ourselves. So we're not saying you can't feel those things, but it's, it happens so easily that we're just like, oh yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it can just having those boundaries and watching how they work, like encouraging your kids to play with other kids, encouraging your kids to be a part of the family time, and just getting to foster those relationships is really, really important. And talking to your kids about it, like helping them understand the importance of it is important too. And that also means that you as a parent also have to live by that. Yeah, so you can't,
I gotta enforce our own boundaries.
You can't be binge watching Netflix or on your phone all the time. And like showing, you have to walk it. So like showing your kids the importance of like face-to-face conversation and talking to them, but also setting those boundaries and explaining, here's why we're not going to watch TV for 3 hours after school. Here's why we don't have tablet time today. Here's why, because, and not just using it as a punishment, like, oh, you got a black market school and that's bad, but using it as like a, we don't need to be watching TV all day. Then we're just sitting and we're not outside and moving our bodies and talking to people and getting to have relationships with people, which is what God wants us to do. And
so that's good. And I think a huge piece of this too is like, I mean, most elementary age kids aren't into social media yet, even though some are, but you know, that's more middle school and high school as they enter into that. But what we find is that people find community online, but it's not real community. They, I mean, people find, you know, like used to be, you had to go to school to, and you at school, you would try to find your group and, you know, there were the, but now anybody can find any group online. And so you can find people and, you know, and they may be one person, you know, here in Florida, and then somebody's in California, then someone's in another country, and you form these friendships, quote unquote friendships online, but they're not true authentic because they're just not proximity. And I think we have substituted these, you know, veneers of relationships for actually, like you said, looking face to face, actually interacting with people, and being known, knowing people and being known. So this kind of bridges into, I think, the technology and isolation bridges into, I think, what is one of the end results of a lot of these shifts and not fully engaging well with them, maybe with our kids. And that is just mental health. That's a constant theme in culture right now. Rightfully, I mean, I think rightfully so. I think one, because we just have a lot more knowledge about things that are going on. We understand our bodies more integratedly now, and it's mind, body, spirit. Like, so let's talk about mental health and kids specifically. And if you were giving advice to parents on this, what would you say?
Man, this is a big one. And so I think the main thing that we talk about, like in kids ministry circles, is helping kids understand their feelings is that root. Because we go so quickly, we go so fast nowadays, like we've got this, and like we blink and we're putting our kids to bed, and like the day is done and the school year is almost done and it's almost time for summer. And, we just go so quickly that we don't have intentional times of just pausing and checking in and like letting our kids regulate their emotions and like letting them feel feelings. I mean, like, oh, I know you're sad about this. I know you're mad about this. What are we going to do about it? Like, how do we process that? How do we learn to be okay with that? And I think it's scary because I don't think kids, the more that I work with kids and the more that I see different kids that come from different places, they just don't know how to process their emotions. And I think that can be hard because life moves so fast and they just have all these feelings. And so I love Raising Boys and Girls is a great ministry. Sissy Goff. And there's another person that helps with that. And they talk a lot about kids and mental health, and they do like feeling charts and wheels so that your child can have more than just the three emotions. I'm happy, mad, or sad. Like they can be frustrated. They can be grateful. They can be sad. They can be emotional about things. And I think that's important. And I think talking to your kids and making sure that they are talking about those, because we don't want them to shut down. And then I think that's another part about technology too, is what you were saying earlier, they can find community elsewhere. And our kids are such impressed. they're at an age where they can be impressed upon by anything and everything.
That's right.
And so making sure that we know what our kids are listening to, what they're watching, what they're hearing, and what they're being told, because they may find a group of people that's okay with the world being bad and wants kids to dive down into a dark, deep hole in that. And we want to just make sure that we are just providing a safe place for kids to feel things, for kids to struggle with things, and for them to just figure out how to handle the world and just process things.
Yeah.
And so that can be, it can be really hard. That's a very challenging thing.
That's good. I would say to those who may listen to that and think, oh gosh, that's just feelings. Okay. Read the Psalms. Mm-hmm. All right. Read the inspired word of God in Psalms, and you'll see like the psalmist David and the other psalmists, as they relate to God with big emotions,
processing joy, their emotions through song,
and anger and rage and, you know, joy and satisfaction and relating to God and letting him transform us as he does as our perfect father.
That's good.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head right there with just giving space to let kids not just feel what they feel, but then to help them process. And as parents, as a shepherd, as a disciple, or like help them process that in light of the promises of God, you know? And we said all the time, like, you're sad. Like, it's okay to be sad, you know, it's okay. Like, but what do we do when we're sad? Like, we go to God and God gives us comfort and our identity in Christ. Like, we have a kid right now who's in middle school and just struggling with academically in one subject, and it's hard. And just say, like, it's okay that this is hard. Like, you don't like doing this because it's so hard. And I'm not saying you have to like doing this. You have to do it and you have to try 100%, but it's okay not to like it, but it's not okay not to try. Like, to validate how he feels about it, not just soak it up. Like, but yeah, it's hard. This isn't your identity. You're good at other things. Let's go. I think that principle applies to helping kids, even just in processing, you know, some of their big emotions they're feeling.
And it requires parents to stop. Like, it requires parents and volunteers. I'm saying
that's, for me, it's the hardest part.
You have to like stop the schedule. You have to stop whatever's important and realize that this is the most important moment is walking through this with my child.
Yeah.
I love what you said about the Psalms, because I'm going through them right now in my quiet time. And there's like, you'll find like sets of two or sets of three Psalms together where Psalm one, everything is falling apart for David.
And the world is on fire.
The Lord has forsaken me. He's delivered me into my enemies.
And then he's also my shepherd and anoints my head.
And then it ends with him like having this awesome occasion where he's celebrating with the people about what God has done for his life. And so I had a situation with a child the other day where the child just started crying. And I was like, why are you crying, buddy? And he was like, my pet died. And it was a pet fish. And so anybody else would have been like, stop crying. It's a fish.
It's just a fish.
Like, it got flushed. It's fine.
That's why not the kids.
Yes, exactly.
I wouldn't do that, but I would think it.
It was one of those moments where like I stopped what I was doing. I let the class keep going. There was another teacher in the room that took over. And we stopped and we prayed and we asked God to help us with our sadness and our pet fish. And like, there are people that are like, God doesn't care about a pet fish, but God cares about us.
He created that pet fish. So I think he cares.
He created the pet fish and he cares about us and he cares about our feelings. And so I was able to talk to him about like, man, like, how cool is it that you were able to love something so well? And when things die, like, we feel very sad about it and we can go to God and he can help us whenever we're sad. He can help us when we feel just alone in things.
Yeah.
And we were able to thank God for that. And so like,
what a shepherding moment, because you're able to be like, you think about how much you love that pet, you know, that how much more God loves you.
Yes.
Like, yeah, you can have those conversations.
Exactly.
Those yeah. Good job, man. Well, I want to just wrap it up with this. You know, there's different philosophies on kids ministry, in the church. And, you know, some are saying you shouldn't have it, that you, whatever. And I disagree. and we have models that we're doing and trying. Why kids minister? Why is kids ministry important?
Man, it's important because it's important for us to help show kids what a relationship with Jesus can look like and how they can be a part of that. And I mean, it's important because Jesus tells us it's important. I mean, simply, like, Jesus allowed the kids to come to them, and we have to enter into a relationship with Jesus as a child. And so it's so important, because those ages, like, there's so many statistics and studies coming out now about how much kids learn in their first like 13 years of life. There's that statistic that's like a child's spiritual worldview is set by the age of 13. Mm. And so like that's right as they're entering middle school.
Yeah.
And so like it's set by then and it's hard to change after that. And so it's so important and it's so valuable. And I think people that serve in kids ministry, I think people that have been a part of kids ministry know that the foundation that we're able to help them see, like we're able to help them learn spiritual disciplines. We're able to help them learn how to study the Bible. We're able to help them learn how to apply that and see what a relationship looks like with Jesus, that it's worth its weight more than gold, you know, of just how valuable and how precious it is that they get that. So
that's good. Yeah. I mean, you're laying foundation, you know, and I think about, one of the things that I love about kids ministry is that, I mean, my kids are my kids. And so I'm, you know, one of the primary influences of their life, but I can't cover it all or do it all. And they need, like, I love that they go to groups on Wednesday nights. And, you know, right now Joanna goes to her second grade girls group and Ezra goes to his second grade boys group. And they have godly men and women and in those particular classes who are a little older than me, who just get to, who are teaching them about God, teach them about their faith, teach them about Jesus, teach about missions, teach about, and it's another voice and it's reinforcing and teaching new things and helping them understand who God is. And then on Sunday mornings, the worship is contextualized for them in a way that they're understanding it. And there is validity to times when kids need to be with adults, and there's a lot that can be caught and taught. And we should have those opportunities as well. But I love that, you know, that it just reinforces and helps lay that foundation. So good. Yeah. So quick question for you. Why do we need so many kids volunteers? You guys are always talking about serving in kids ministry. Mm-hmm. Why do we need so many kids volunteers?
Oh man.
This is a current thorn in your side, right?
It is.
I mean,
it's always a thorn.
It always is. It's just what it is. It's a thorn in every church and every across. Anywhere that does kids ministry.
Yes. So two things, the number one, and it's just number one in kids ministry, and it has to be, is safety. Safety is number one. We have to provide a safe space for kids. And so for that, for us, that means ratios. We have safe teacher to child ratios in the classroom. And so that just helps the teachers be able to manage a classroom if there's a big classroom, and just provide a safe space so that you have enough eyes on the kids and so that you're able to keep them safe. Number two is that relational aspect that you were just talking about with your kids on Wednesday nights and their leaders is, just, we need people in there that want to teach and want to invest in them. I always tell people, like, you would never send your child to a school where they had a different teacher every day. Mm-hmm. And so we need and want leaders that are consistent in classrooms, who can teach them about the Word of God and who can build relationships with them and can invest in them and can get to learn kids and know who can't sit together if they want to learn about the Bible together, who can sit together.
That's right.
And just to be able to pour into leaders, like my kids' ministry leaders when I was growing up were sweet volunteers who called out ministry in me, even though I was a thorn in all of their sides. I had ADHD. I was the worst.
And can't imagine this.
I know. And like they were able to call it out of me, even though I had all these issues and I didn't want to do anything like that. And I struggled listening in the classroom and I struggled learning. Like they were the ones that, because they knew me and because they were able to invest in me, that they developed things in me that I didn't know were going to come to fruition until I was in high school.
Yeah.
And so it's just so important and it's just so incredible to be a part of something like that. And so we need people to be a part of this big story and to be a part of helping kids, just in an eternal way. My favorite story that I've started sharing more often is I was at camp one year and I had a kids ministry leader who was talking to me about kids ministry and just why she serves and why she served in her church. And she just got emotional and she just looked at me and she said, Lucas, one day we are all going to stand before the throne of Jesus and we're going to be worshiping him together. And you're going to look to your left and you're going to look to your right, and you're going to see kids and people standing around the throne of God that you were able to have a small impact in because you said yes to serving in kids ministry.
Yeah.
And like, what else good. Could you ask for? Yeah. Like, what else could, I mean, yes, yeah. sign me up. I'll so do it every on. Week. Come every, on.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of which, if you are not currently serving in kids ministry,
come on,
we need you.
Join the team.
We're kids ministry's grown. Here mm-hmm. at Church on Bayshore, and so we need more volunteers. We have, you know, some great families who've been serving who are moving, which is that happens Boo. Every summer here. Thank you, U.S. military. And then we have some who have had babies or having yes. babies, mm-hmm. and so they're gonna have to take a break. Hey, so we need you, honestly. Yes. We need you, and I would say this, like the kids do, like the kids need mm-hmm. you to invest in them. So yep. if you've not taken that step, or maybe you're currently serving like once a month or twice a month, you say, hey, I can go twice a month. I can serve every week. Do it. Contact Lucas at Lucas with a K, churchonbayshore.org. And let's start the process. So we're going to end this. We've been doing a little, we do a little Mount Rushmore here talking about the four mm-hmm. best or four highlights or whatever. And so I asked Lucas to prepare his Mount Rushmore of kids ministry. Mm-hmm. And I told him, hey, I'm going to give you a heads up. We're doing this. Cause I want you to think. Mm-hmm. And I told him, you can define this. You can have the four things that make you the most excited. The four, one's good, one's bad, one's funny. I don't know how you decided what's your four on Mount Rushmore, but what's number one? And tell us what kind of kids ministry mm-hmm. thing this is.
Yes. So I've thought a lot about this. And so I've done some more recent ones. So my grossest moment in kids ministry
is
here. It's when...
Does it involve one of my children?
No, it does not. Okay. It does not. But it's when children poop in the ball pit in the soft play area. So that's super fun. That's a gross moment in kids ministry.
That happens?
Yes, it does. It's happened actually several times since I've been here. Don't worry, parents. We clean it up. We bleach everything. It gets shut down.
Yeah. It's yep. like the place in Chick-fil-A. Yes. It gets shut down mm-hmm. real
and
quick.
We don't ask volunteers to clean it. So that don't let that turn you off from serving in kids ministry. We take care of it.
But if you're willing to be on like the emergency Maybe. Ball pit poop you cleanup know, crew,
it would be great.
But Lucas,
we would appreciate it. Funniest moment was here recently. I had a kid in our Wednesday night class and we were talking about a Bible story where I think it's Paul in jail and the Lord like helps him get out of jail. Yeah. And it's like miraculous because the people fall asleep and the angel walks him out of the jail. And one of our boys was just sitting there and he just had his hands on his head and he was like, whoa, every detail. And then, and he gets to the story where he's out of the jail and nobody woke up. And the kid just looks up and he says, I have so many questions. How did this happen? And it was so funny watching all of these things click in his head of like, this actually happened. And like, how did it happen? And so that was just hilarious. And in so many ways, the sweetest moment in kids ministry, I think for me was, serving at camp in camp ministry. My first summer of camp, I had a child come up to me and at the end of a response time, and he was talking about how his parents had just gone through a divorce and how he, like, it was a great divorce. Mm-hmm. And for a third grader to tell me it was a great divorce, I was like, what?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Was like, they're very nice to each other. They both come to my games. And I know friends that have parents that don't do that. And just how incredible it was. And he was just talking about how he just still couldn't find peace about it because mm-hmm. the theme for that day was unseen peace. Yeah. And he was like, I just can't have peace for it. And I just need help. How do I get peace for the situation? And I hadn't. My parents had never experienced divorce or anything. And so I was able to connect him with a few other staffers on that team whose parents had been through a divorce and things like that. And so we were able to connect him with scriptures for peace and different things like that. And so that was the end of that story, I thought, until the next summer. I was at a different location and his church was at the location that I was at. They were a church that went to different locations every year. And he came up to me during a response time with the notebook that he had the year before with all of the scriptures that we had all walked through.
That's impressive for kids.
Yes, a third grader. later. Yeah. And he was able to tell me how God had been working in his heart to help him find peace in this situation, and how the things that the different leaders on the staff, and he was able to name all those staffers and what they told him.
What a huge impact.
It was like, yes, that's the moment.
Amazing.
Yes. And so that was really sweet and great. And so those are three, I think. My favorite moment, and really it's moments, is having baptism conversations with kids.
Yeah.
And like, I was just a part of one, the other day where I was like, why do you want to get baptized? And this little girl, she was like, I want to get baptized because my friend so-and-so at school doesn't know who Jesus is. And I need to, I want to be able to tell her. I want to tell her about my baptism. And I want her to ask questions about why I got baptized, so I can tell her about Jesus. And so I can tell her that I got baptized to show all my friends that I love Jesus and that I follow Jesus. And I was like, there you go. That's great. Yeah. Come
That's
on.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, those are great, man. Those are great. You know, I think back to like, I was thinking about like my memories from like kids ministry, like when I was a kid, and it's hard to remember a lot of them because it's been a little while, but every memory that I had,
like 5 years,
that's right, you know? Yeah. But I was thinking, as I was thinking, all of the memories that I kept thinking about were actually just moments in kids ministry learning something from an adult. Like I remember, like, you know, even, you know, fourth, fifth and sixth grade had the same, you know, Sunday school teacher who was one of my friends growing up. It was his mom. Like, and I remember her, like we were punks, and she just was so patient and kind with us. Like I remember at first and second grade kids ministry and learning like, about being ambassadors for Christ. Like I remember learning that, and I can still see those people's faces and their names. And I think, wow, I'm so grateful. You know, I'm so grateful for these people. So, you know, this isn't a long plug for kids ministry and why you should serve, but don't you want to be somebody's memory 40 years from now? Like you're the reason that I'm this foundation slate. I mean, come on, let's just be used by God for that as a church. You know, we want to be a church that it, every generation is prioritizing the next generation. And that is the way we do it, is serving families and serving their kids. So, hey, you did a great job doing something that you don't love doing. And that is talking to a microphone on a podcast. So, so yeah, if you've got more kids ministry questions, you feel free to shoot him Lucas's way.
Absolutely.
Or me, and I'll forward it on to him.
That's right.
But yeah, so hey, next week we're going to continue the conversation in Next Gen Ministry. So be sure and tune in.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.